Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we're in February now.
It's hard to believe. Time goes by very quickly.
The month of love.
Oh.
And broken hearts and hate.
I was going to say, well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So that's
for some of us.
That's the theme for our program.
I love my family. and my cat. There you go. February.
So how does that? As this is not a Lonely Hearts program.
When you said that to me, I'm like, what? What does that have to do with food and wine?
Well, but because how many things did you love as a kid that you think is just disgusting now?
Yeah, there are a couple of things for sure.
Do you have any idea how much I liked Dr. Pepper when I was a kid?
Oh, that was...
I thought it was the best thing in the world.
And I liked the bottle, too. That bottle with the three numbers on it.
And
super
I thought it was so weird that my dad really didn't like it.
Oh.
And then I had one for the first time in 35
sweet.
Years or something.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is...
Oh, see, I still like Dr. Pepper. We didn't have it as a kid. That wasn't an option in my house.
Oh, my gosh.
We had Pepsi. My grandfather drank Pepsi, which he called Peps. And,
regardless of preferences.
Sure.
The things that, like...
Like Quisp. I loved Quisp when I was a kid. It's got to have a gajillion million grams of sugar in every bite.
Well, I mean, if you would like a nice big bowl of Quisp right now, I'm sure we can find one for you.
I don't think so. I don't even think they make it. Well, if they do, it's few and far between. I loved that. Well, and I liked the little space guy on the box when I was a kid, too. I thought he was super cute. And I read all of my cereal boxes when I was little. That was like my favorite part of eating cereal was getting to read the box. I don't know.
You just didn't read the nutrition information on those
No,
days.
Definitely not.
The thing that...
Did they have nutritional information on the boxes back then?
the reverse is true, right? I mean, they're foods that you just couldn't stand. Like,
absolutely.
The number of times my father made fun of me and my brother made fun of me for how much I dislike broccoli.
Oh, yeah, and I love... yes.
Yeah, and the reality is... Yes, my taste changed.
Your dad made fun of you?
Oh, like to no end. Would you like some broccoli? No, it's the worst thing in the world. Get away from me, Dad. You know, that kind of thing. But
it's so good for you, too.
I mean, I recall I was in the hospital one time.
What's a weird texture?
No.
The
little
broccoli?
Green furry trees. I was in the hospital one time, and I got a Get Well card, and in the card were broccoli seeds as a joke. But if you recall, we had a restaurant that did a lot of tapas. And one of the things I put on the menu, one of the most popular things of all time, maybe the most popular vegetable dish we've ever served anywhere, was broccoli from the plancha.
Wasn't that spicy or something?
Yeah,
they were
Fresno chilies.
Oof, yeah.
You know, pecorino cheese, a little.
Did you come up with that dish?
Yeah, that was my dish.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Okay. So, hey, Pop. You know, move on.
You did grow up.
Time to move on.
Stop giving me broccoli seeds. I'm going to plant those broccoli seeds, and they're going to grow forth. Yeah. All right. Well, that's funny.
Grow forth.
Grow.
I don't know if that is
grow and go forward.
Solid grammar, exactly, Cynthia Jane.
Gosh!
But what are the things? What's your top list of things?
Oh my
that
God.
You couldn't stand as a kid.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, there are things that I've known you to
my
really
gosh.
Dislike.
Fish. I mean. Oh my gosh, my mom would make cod and scrod. I grew up in Indiana.
Cod could be amazing.
I was in the middle of the country. There, yeah, well, sure, now it can be. But, in 1972, you were probably getting frozen cod. Actually, I'm sure it was frozen cod. There was no fresh cod in Indiana. And my mom would bake it for like 30 minutes.
I mean, the famous river cod from Indiana.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't stand the way it smelled. I wanted to cry when we had to eat it. I mean, it was so awful. And my mom was a very good cook. I mean, this is no reflection on her. She was trying to make healthy food for her family. And, you know, whatever. I hated fish. And we didn't have it very often. I think it was, you know, my father was in the meat business. We ate a lot of beef and pork and other meats. But, when I was thinking about this, you know, conversation and, you know, when you think about feeding, my mom had to feed six people. And... You know, every now and then, because my dad was grew up and was a butcher, we would have some really good meat. But my mom had to, make it work. So, you know, had to buy food for a lot of people to eat every night. So, you know, it's not like she was buying the best of the best for every meal. Certainly not. I mean, I didn't like lamb when I was little either because, you know, she would do lamb stew and I literally couldn't stand the way it smelled. It is amazing to me that I am a chef sometimes.
Sometimes having known you a really long time and have watched your evolution of taste on some things, but there are moments when I agree that I'm surprised that you arrived where you arrived.
Well, totally.
As young as you did, because
absolutely.
I mean, the person I met, I remember trying to give you cilantro or trying to give you ginger.
Oh, I couldn't stand any of those things.
Anything spicy all.
You were very
helpful. Or olives. You were like, oh.
Those black olives in the can. Man, my mom loved those.
I didn't give you black olives in the can.
No,
I gave
you
beautiful
I'm just saying,
olives.
But that's what I grew up with. So then
you rejected them.
The sad thing is, The sad thing is that, you know, what you grow up with informs what you think the food is like.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't, and of course we grew up and, you know, I was born in 1964. You know, food is very, very different almost 60 years later. And what's available to the home cook is very different. I mean, I remember when we couldn't really find shallots readily when I started cooking, you know, so when I was 19, the food world in our country has changed dramatically.
No question.
And the quality of product that you can easily buy at a grocery store is night and day. So there's no wonder that I didn't like things when I was little. If I had had, you know, incredible olives when I was little, I probably would have liked them. If I had had great fish when I was little, I would have liked it. And honestly, I went to college to study business management. I wanted to own my own restaurant and be a front of the house manager. I wanted to manage restaurants and own restaurants. I'm glad that I realized the path of cooking because I love what I do. And I don't think I would have loved being a front of the house manager. The creativity wouldn't have been there for me. And I love working with food. I love everything about it. And
you have no idea how much creativity it takes to deal with a highly strung chef.
I thought you were going to say the customer, but all right.
Well, guests are easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's so easy
guests
to work
are easy.
With a
they
great
want to enjoy
chef
themselves.
Like me and our chefs because we are very professional and we are easy to get along with.
So besides fish, what else did you really like?
About lamb. I will not forget when she would make lamb stew, which, I mean, I didn't even like the potatoes in there, right? Because I'm sure, you know, that was a lot of work. And, you know,
I was not averse to strong taste when I was a kid.
I just didn't like lamb.
I was just averse to bad cooking.
I think it probably was weird back then, too. I don't know, whatever. But maybe I was just, you know, I was just so little.
I know from my daughters that strong tastes are hard for them.
Yeah, maybe that's just what it was.
You know, the younger one is still in most proteins are not her favorite thing. That's any kind of edge to the taste. She could almost just be a vegetarian and be totally happy about it because the flavors are milder.
Yeah.
In general.
I remember liking green beans, and that was really the only vegetable that I liked at all. I hated peas. I mean, I sat at many a dinner table when my family was watching TV because we had to eat our food. I was raised where you had to clean your plate and you didn't get to decide what went on your plate. My mother, if I didn't put peas on my plate, she would have put peas on my plate, and then I had to sit there. And thank God we had a dog.
Well, I think also we were hungry.
Well, I didn't care about being hungry. I wasn't going to eat something that I didn't like. I just was not. I just didn't want to.
No,
yeah.
we were hungry, and
you well.
It was not always consistent what was in the house.
No.
You know? So
something
was there.
You're eating
it. If it's edible and it wasn't barking, you know, you're like glad it arrived.
my dog ate a lot of food that I snuck to him when I couldn't stand to eat the food. But yeah, it is weird to think that.
Yeah, that's a fat dog is a sure sign of a disobedient child.
She wasn't fat. She was just right. Schultz von Steen Wolf, little toy dachshund. Oh, she was adorable. Her bed was right. Her little bed was right behind my chair.
So.
At the dining room table.
All right, so lamb, fish.
Oh, I didn't
else?
Like anything. I really didn't. If you can believe this, I loved it when my mom made sauerkraut and pork, and I loved it when she made pot pie and noodle soup. She made all the, and those were things she made from scratch, and, she made everything from scratch. And I do remember loving those traditional dishes that were very traditional in my family back a million generations.
Did she sweeten the sauerkraut?
Well, and also, you know, we didn't have pasta growing up. Like, that wasn't an option. My mom, within the last probably 10 years, told me that the only reason she ever made pizza or pasta was because my eldest sister went over to a neighbor's house and they had it. And she came back and said, oh, could we make this? And so my mom tried to figure out how to make it for her. She was very ill. So my mom was going to do anything she wanted her done. And and that was rare that we, you know, my mom would on occasion make a pan of lasagna, and sometimes we would have pizza that she tried her best to do. So there were also things that just weren't on the menu, quite frankly, you know.
Yeah, but I was just curious.
Mm-hmm. How about you? What did you really dislike besides broccoli?
Not that much,
really.
Honestly, yeah. I was hungry all the time.
Well, you're a boy too.
One,
yeah, right?
And it wasn't that consistent.
Right, right.
And the sort of chief cook for me was my great grandmother, who was a very country. Her daughter was not a gifted cook. There's a famous story. A very famous. There's a famous story in the family about her making meatballs with peanuts in them.
Oh.
And we asked her why she would do that. And she'd gotten a recipe from some. Oh. She was forever cutting out recipes.
Yes.
And she said, well, that was to make them crunchy.
Oh, boy. Oh, my. Yucky.
And I recall.
I would have cried if I had
to eat those
when I was little.
My brothers and I looked around just like, and afterwards, like, why would you want a crunchy meatball? Like, we looked forward so much to these meatballs.
Why would you
want it to have a crunch? It would seem like the strangest thing.
When we first went over to her house, we had some rather odd food. But she also had a cook when she was younger, right?
Yes.
So she didn't, as a young housewife, her situation was different from your great-grandmother, where she had to feed a million people.
She married a man in a very good situation.
Yeah.
So
she didn't have to learn how to cook, unlike,
Yeah, my great-grandmother's the cook.
Right, your great-grandmother. That's why your great-grandmother was such a great cook, and she was from the South
cooking for 17 people.
Yeah.
People, including her parents.
That's crazy. I mean, that's. She was the eldest, your great-grandmother?
She was the eldest girl.
Or one of the eldest? Yeah, the eldest girl.
And the boys didn't cook,
Of course not.
So. There was not much that I did not... there's a lot I wasn't exposed to, and there's certainly plenty of things the first time I tried them. It's really more as maybe when I moved to Philly and I started to try more things, that then they seemed so strange. Then that right down the street, I was living in South Philly, and there's a Vietnamese restaurant down the street.
Nice.
And I'd been to a lot of the Italian ones in the neighborhood. And some were excellent, like little tiny places.
Wonderful.
The actual regional, not just like Italian-American cooking can be fun, but it's not like the regional food in Italy. And there I found some real things in little places. But there were flavors in the Vietnamese restaurant that I almost thought were confusing when I was a kid. I only really, it was really like... either Eurocentric or Southern food that was, real melting pot American cuisine. But ingredients, I think it was mostly bad cooking. There were certain vegetables like, no, I didn't want spinach. Why? I love spinach.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah,
I probably would have loved spinach then if someone could cook.
Yeah.
That's part of it is just like...
I think also when we were growing up was the way they cooked.
It was like frozen boiled spinach. Like, no, it's just... Yeah. I would rather chew on paper.
I think had we grown up now, it would. And I know for me, it would be a totally different conversation.
Oh, my,
if I grew up now, and my mom could cook with what we have now, I'd probably would have loved everything she made.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, I'm speaking from the experience of parenting two young daughters who don't love everything. We'll get back to more love and hate on Foreign Wolf owned Food and Wine. A February edition when we come back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And our topic today is love and hate, now that we're in February. And, you know, love comes to mind, but hate comes close after. So, and as it relates to food, we're talking about things that didn't work out, you know, as a kid for us. And getting into, like, how some things are cooked. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, there's some things now that I'll give my kids that, like, I know that they love broccoli. And they love it a couple of different ways. They love Brussels sprouts.
That's great.
I mean, how many kids?
No, that's great.
Hated Brussels sprouts back in the day.
Well, you're also a good cook, so you know whatever you're doing it right.
But they also get some of these things in a couple of different ways because I mean that, like my wife, a lot of her comfort food is Pacific Rim, you know, and so that introduces other flavors and other traditions to cooking methodology. You know, that's, and they like a lot of the ingredients we would have thought of as controversial too, but. One is just the quality and freshness of ingredients.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, that's, we cook what is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, almost everything's better than it used to be. I mean, our stoves are better. Even, you know, if you're buying a pretty basic one, our stoves are better than they used to be. I mean, the pots and pans and knives that we have the option to work with, you know, the tools that are available to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a totally different world from what we grew up with, which makes a difference for the home cook as well.
Yeah, but it... But there's still times when, okay, so my younger daughter, she'll get, you make a chicken dish, so, and she doesn't like chicken, but there are like five different chicken dishes, and she has like a rating system for the ones that she loves the most. And there's one, it's from a very particular restaurant, and it's a Persian-style chicken kebab.
Good.
With a marinade that she loves.
Oh, definitely.
And
I'm with her.
That is the pinnacle on...
Is it yellow?
Chicken cookery.
Is the kebab yellow?
Thoroughly.
Yeah, I love that.
And... But there's another version. And then there's a version that Dad makes that's a little bit different, that is very close to the Persian chicken, but it's not quite there. But she'll... And her rating scale is interesting. It goes from like, that is the best. That is almost as good as the best.
That's very cute.
That is not the best, but I'll eat it.
Okay.
And then it's, I don't want that.
All right.
Okay. And then it's, that makes me cry.
Well, I get that. All right. Yeah.
So it's a pretty severe curve. It's a pretty severe curve. And it's demonstrative.
I mean, I love corn now, but I hated corn when I was a kid.
What?
Yeah, I think it came... Well, okay.
I could have eaten my weight in corn when I was a kid.
Well, I will say that it did... I did know the difference when we went... My mom went down to the farmer's stand and got fresh corn and I shucked it and then we ate it. That I liked. No. But the stuff out of the can...
The old corn in the can?
Yeah, the corn in the can, yuck, you know. And yeah. I think I probably had that, you know, more... Well, obviously, we only grew corn so many times a year, so... or could get fresh corn so many times. But, you know, I mean, I shucked those peas too. So those peas were good. Yeah, anything that was fresh, I would have eaten, but the canned stuff was nasty. Or frozen product I didn't really like, although I would have eaten the frozen green beans. The canned green beans, not so much. Fresh ones, yes, please.
So, all right, so how about a recipe for something that you did not like as a kid, deeply?
Yeah.
But you do now.
Okay.
And you like to serve it.
Okay. We could start with lamb. Because I didn't like my mom's lamb stew. And I was thinking about what I do really love. And I love braised dishes and I love beans and I love rice a lot. And, you know, a bunch of vegetables too. But the idea of braising lamb and searing it nicely, having a good cut... you know, obviously good cut, meaning that it's a quality piece of meat. Obviously it's an off primal cut. So it's something that needs to be cooked gently so it will become tender to eat. But putting the potatoes and the carrots and the celery and onion in, you know, and making a wonderful vegetable, you know, meat dish that has this incredible sauce. And, you know, you can then dip your bread in, or you could use the next day and add, you know, if you ate all the potatoes, you could add pasta to the next day. I mean, it's a dish that, or you could add rice and make rice the next day. It's a dish that you can do so many things with. And you could add red wine to it, or you could add, you know, your some kind of chili if you like that. Instead, you want the food to be spicy. There's so many different things you can do to a braised dish to make it your own and reflect your own culture or your own likes or your own feelings for that particular day, which is what tends to affect me when I cook. What am I trying to achieve today? What do I want to make today? And braised lamb, I mean, is a food that you can feed a lot of people with. It can, you know, it's not the most inexpensive meat, but since it's a braised cut, it is less expensive than trying to buy a rack of lamb, which would be very expensive at the grocery, especially right now. And a braised dish. And then, I mean, to just answer your question with fish, I mean, the most simple way is, frankly, to buy the freshest piece of fish possible. Get a good steel pan hot on the stove.
What kind of fish?
Let's just say salmon, because you can buy that readily at the grocery, and look for the fish from a fishmonger that you trust. And, you know, one of the things, if you want to say, hey, can I just see that piece of salmon, ask them to hand it to you, smell it. If it smells good, then you're in good shape. You're not allowed to touch it at the grocery. So, if you could touch it, you would want it to spring back. If it was a whole fish, if you can handle filleting a fish, you want the eyes to be clear, the gills to be deep red, the fish to, the flesh to respond to touch, and for it to smell good and for it to look good. But just put a hot steel pan, get a steel pan on the stove, make it hot, add a neutral oil like corn oil, add enough oil to nicely coat the bottom of the pan. The fish should be blotted dry, and then go skin side down first if it doesn't have the skin on. Press down a little bit with a fish spatula and sear it, flip it over, let it sit on the stove for a moment, and pop it in the oven and cook it to the temperature that you like. I like my very fresh salmon to be medium rare, but you may like it cooked more or all the way. Just don't overcook it, because that's where it becomes an enemy. That's where you won't like it. It will lose, like most food, it loses its natural moisture and becomes dry and unpleasant to eat, quite frankly, and you've destroyed it. Very simple. You can put a little bit of brown butter on the stove and brown it. Add a little bit of fresh lemon juice. Something so simple as that. You could add some capers to that, or you could add fresh chives and capers to that. But just make a quick little brown butter sauce. And nappe means to coat. Pour it over the top of the fish. Maybe serve it with some wilted baby spinach, and you know, or some mustard greens, or kale, or something that you really like. I mean, there are a million things. Your broccoli is excellent with salmon. There's just so many things you could serve with it.
It's funny. My daughters, the all time for salmon for them is always, and do it in a pan, get skin good and crispy, put a decent amount of black pepper on the skin, actually. Mm-hmm. So they come off like little crackers that you can have separately.
That's fun.
And then a little bit of butter in the pan at the very end. The salmon fat in the pan.
Yeah.
With the butter, and kind of nappe them with that. Mm-hmm. When they go onto the plate. They always want like little new potatoes, like skin on, like olive oil crushed. You know, we just boil them and then empty the water out, let them sit there in the steam, dump them in a bowl, crush them with a fork, mm-hmm. salt, and good extra virgin. And then what they call popcorn broccoli, which is it's literally like in a toaster oven pan. Broccoli that you tossed in olive oil with salt and maybe sesame seeds.
Okay.
And put them in there, let them toast. And when they begin to brown a little bit, just a little bit, you know, you can smell it. Mm-hmm. A little bit like popcorn popping, you know. Then that goes on the plate. And that's a definite comfort salmon meal for the girls. And salmon's forgiving on temperature, too. Like, because of the fat content, if you go to, it's really nice to have it medium rare, but if or more rare if you want, but if you go further, it's still going to have pretty good moisture.
Yeah, salmon has a high fat content.
Still be nice to consume, yeah.
Yeah, and that high fat content, that's actually why I picked it, because it's one of the easier fish to cook because of its high fat content.
Yeah.
It's also very clear what temperature it is, because it's a pink fish.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at that and go, oh, yeah, no, that's under for me. I need to cook that longer. Whereas a grouper, a rockfish, something like that, it's a little bit harder to tell, because of its color. But yeah, I mean, that's a good idea. I like the popcorn broccoli. Yeah, that's fun.
Because it's two pans on the stove.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
It's literally the little pop the little thing in the toast oven and you don't require sauce.
No.
You know.
And your crushed potatoes are an easy way to make quote unquote mashed potatoes. You know,
yeah.
It's so easy to do it that way. And frankly, you know, they're not watered down with butter and milk or butter and cream, however you make your potato puree. And so they're really, I mean, what kind of potatoes did you say you were using? Yukons or Reds?
Redskins.
Or, yeah. I love.
Just little Redskins.
I like to make that with fingerling potatoes.
Yeah.
And we've gotten some really good, I mean, from a regular produce purveyor, we just got beautiful fingerling potatoes. I can also get them from our local farmer still. And oh my gosh, they have such a high sugar content, and there are different types of fingerling potatoes, and they're all, I mean, I've never had one I didn't like, but those are fun to crush too. So yeah, I like that. I like doing that at home. It's much easier, and who cares what it looks like? You know, I mean, in a restaurant, it can be a little rustic to do that, so, you know, it's not as easy to do it in a fine restaurant, but wow, is it good, and it's a great.
Yeah, I mean, the moment that you take something like that and put it in a ring mold, you might as well just go ahead and hit yourself in the head with a pan. And that's just like, no.
So since we are in February and I still have the ability to get truffles, I'm also making the fingerling potatoes where I boil them in the skin, which is the best way to boil them in heavily salted water, and then remove the skin. I cut them in half basically I use a hot knife, and you have to keep the blade clean because of the high starch content of the potato. It makes it much easier to slice through them. Or you can even oil the blade a little bit, but be careful. And then tossed it with a tiny bit of extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of corn oil, salt and pepper, and finely chopped truffle. And I never serve potatoes the next day. I mean, when we came in the next day and we still had a few left. Having sat all night with the truffles, we ate those. They were so good. We ate them cold.
taking that and putting it on Silpat,
mm-hmm.
and just getting it hot, like a little potato cake, almost like a little cracker, like smeared on there.
Yeah, that would be fun. Well, we left them whole.
Yeah.
So you mean pureed, if they were pureed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be yummy.
You know, that just thinking, that'd be a nice little cracker for a little salmon tartare or something, you know?
Yeah, that would be fun.
The idea of sushi when I was a kid.
Oh, I didn't even know what that was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of sushi. No.
Yeah.
So you'd heard of it? Did you have them here? You had sushi stores or
Well, in a sprawling metropolis, sophisticated city like Baltimore.
Well, I did grow up in a small town. So you got me there. We did travel, but
in a way, it wasn't like it was a prominent thing, but it did exist, and people were completely weirded out by the entire idea. The funny thing is that I don't know, the idea didn't bother me. I think the thing that's changed for me over time. The most, as far as things, I didn't hate them, but they were unfamiliar, you know? And sometimes people are afraid of things that they're not familiar with, or they don't like the idea of something they're not familiar with. And that's a shame, because with food, I'm forever telling my children, and they're always like, no, Dad, stop that. I'm like, if you don't try it, you don't know what you're going to like.
Exactly.
Well, you may not like it.
Right.
You may not like it the first time. You know, you may not have it the way that you want it the first time, but you don't not try things.
Mm-hmm.
The more that I have dug into different Middle Eastern cooking, or dug in more into Caribbean cooking, or especially Asian cooking, and understanding some of the differences between food from, and I'm a million miles from expert on any of it. But I know there are lots of flavors that are interesting,
mm-hmm.
and the balance points of the cuisine are different than what I know in a lot of Western cooking. And I find all of that super fascinating, and I like the idea of playing with that. I think it's a shame. It's funny, the program's Love and Hate and Food and Wine, and I don't know that I love good cooking. I love interesting things, and I love things that are of the moment.
Right.
But I don't know that...
I didn't hate anything. I didn't like it.
I do hate choices made for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Like those strawberries that you have to have. when they're amazing, like those first strawberries when they show up, it's like the, you know, third weekend of April or something, and our guys in Virginia show up, and those first ones, they're kind of pale, but the aroma, it's like, oh, oh my God. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing like that.
Well, we've become used to the fact that we can get anything we want any time of the year. And I think slowly we're returning to the recognition that, guess what, it's not as good.
Even if you can get a solid, like, B minus any time of the year,
yeah,
is it worth...
Well, that's a purist kind of point of view, and yeah. I'm with you, of course, but at the same time, I mean, I don't know how...
It's nice.
I mean,
I'm not going to say that I don't go to the store and buy apples right now.
Right.
You know.
Of course you do.
Do I know the best ones are available in a short space of time? Of course.
Well, but I will say the corn that I picked from my own farm this summer was the best corn I have ever had in my entire life because I took it off the plant, put it in my car, and drove down to the restaurant and made soup with it immediately. I'm sure
it's the most expensive corn you've ever bought.
It was very, very, very expensive, free. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, I mean, it's astonishing how much you can enjoy food when it's at its best and when it's, you know, right off the plant or, you know, it is a very different story when you're talking about a green bean that came off the plant versus a canned green bean that you had when you were a kid. I mean, those are two totally different things. To me, the canned green bean is, you know.
It's interesting. There's a bit of a parallel philosophically, I think. It culturally super different, but about food and philosophically, and sometimes I find there's a parallel in Italy and in Japan with the approach to food, where you can specialize so much on a particular ingredient from a particular place, and instead of elaborating that ingredient, it's just purely a celebration of it, and sometimes in its simplest form. You know, the particular kind of sweet potato in Japan that just roasted with salt or, you know, a particular kind of a squash or an herb or, like, you know, wild asparagus.
I will never forget eating the wild asparagus, nor will I forget seeing it. I mean, it's like blowing in the wind.
You mean stopping the car and pulling it out of the ground?
I'm like, are you kidding me? It was amazing. It was so different from ours. You know, it was like long and willowy and tiny and thin and, oh, so good. I mean, and the fact that it's so tiny and long, I mean, there's different way. I mean, you could do so many different things with it.
You can, but you have to really consider it, everything about it. And when you have something that is that specialized, exactly how you show it and what format. People wonder about why are all these pasta shapes and why all the different names? Because they do different things.
They have a job. The pasta has
a job. They do different things.
Yep.
They're striated for reasons. They're shaped for reasons. Things are noodles and widths for reasons. You know, and there's history behind all of those things. And digging into that the mentality where you have something special and you really consider it and really celebrate it and share it, that I love.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
That I love the most.
Yeah.
Anyway, when we come back on Formidable Wolf from Food & Wine, we're going to get into some the dark side of this. Love and hate on Food & Wine, Formidable Wolf on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking about love and hate with food and wine. And we've talked a lot about things that we didn't like and how, like, we've reconciled with them and now maybe celebrate them. And there's an attitude about all that.
Learning process.
What about things that you were into as a kid or back in the day, maybe as a chef or, you know, like, what did you think was terrific and now you're kind of like, eh?
Oh. Huh.
I know the top of my list.
Why don't you go first?
As like a young cook.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
Red pepper anything and roasted red pepper everything.
The tricolor pepper craze.
Roasted. This is an 80s thing. This is an 80s thing.
Oh, totally 80s.
But a red pepper coulis is a sauce for any God bless
it
thing.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, what? Yeah.
Yeah, there was a dish that looked great. It was grilled scallops with a charred red pepper coulis. Okay. And little crisp pieces of pancetta that rested on each piece of scallop, and a little bundle of spinach, like a little bit lemony spinach in the center of that plate. Okay. It was a cute plate. It was a very 80s looking plate.
Yeah.
But when I think about the flavors now together,
the peppers,
I am disgusted.
Spinach and pancetta.
I'm just like, yuck, yuck, no. Yuck. I don't want charred pepper concentrate.
I don't want any peppers like that. The green bell peppers, I mean, I wouldn't work with those
now.
I've been listening to you whining
about green bell peppers.
Oh, green
since
bell peppers
early
shouldn't
90s.
Be allowed to be grown anywhere. I can't stand them.
Well, the funny thing
is, we'll get some write-ins on that.
Green bell peppers grow up and become
what?
Other color peppers.
Oh.
And some of them become bigger green bell peppers.
I love, like, you know, poblanos. Poblanos are one of my favorite. I mean, green bell peppers taste like, I don't know what, green bell peppers, I guess.
Oh, Cindy, you just like poblanos because they sound fancy.
Ugh, God. Poblanos, jalapenos, all the good peppers, I love them. Okay.
So, but like I said, with peppers, especially that kind of, when I think of that dish, I'm just horrified.
I don't know what the tricolor
Why would I put pancetta on top of a scallop, like a strong flavored pork like that? Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, people like bacon and scallops.
But it wasn't smoked like it just.
Just wasn't right. Yeah, because pancetta is cured, not smoked.
Yeah, it just.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a restaurant that opened in the early 90s, and it was the biggest deal in Washington called Red Sage.
Oh.
Mark Miller's restaurant.
Yeah.
And what? And. Being in the business and the guy who built
that was popular that
and
place.
the guy who built it was a great big guy that I had known for a long time, Don Senek.
Oh yeah.
And he built it for him.
He
so
was cool.
I like Don.
Yeah, he had a lot of personality.
Yeah, his character.
Big guy, big character, big personality. Yeah.
And Don was one of a bunch of people that like invited me to come to one of the early nights in that restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and. There are a couple things I recall from that meal. One was that everything had chipotle chilies.
Oh, yeah.
Everything that I had chipotle chilies somehow. And this is a very, like, New Mexico-driven food, right? And it was a big, like, fantasy, like, New Mexico cowboy interior in this building in downtown D.C.
Was it underground, or did it just feel like it was underground?
Most of it was underground.
Yeah, I vaguely recall that. I think it was there once. I think we went there once. Yeah.
And, wow.
That's a funny description.
But the couple of things that I had a pork dish. I had a pork chop, and it was a chipotle chili and chocolate sauce, like bitter chocolate sauce, which I think could have been okay.
I mean, sort of like his version of mole.
Yeah.
But weird.
I think it could have been okay, but it was sweet.
Oh.
And like really sweet and smoky. And there was something of, I don't know, it reminded me of like.
Like it had molasses in it.
Someone with really bad personal habits. But that dish. Mm-hmm. And then there was corn ice cream.
Ew. I'm sorry. That just.
And that.
No.
I really disliked.
Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, you have to be really good to make corn ice cream good.
But food took a really, really, really long time. And I recall, and the managers were all wearing like Western gear, you know, this sort of thing. And trying to, instead of being like D.C. was still a very like French restaurant town. And correct. And
early 90s and for early sure.
And this guy walks over to the table and it's like a big wavy banquet, you know, amongst the cacti in the fantasy setting. And he sits down. He's got everything but freaking chaps on, you know. And he's got the buttons on his shirt, you know, the whole thing. And he comes, and I'm at the end of the banquet. And he comes, and instead of talking to the table or going to the host, He comes and sits on the banquette next to me because I'm so friendly, clearly. You know.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine your expression when that happened.
I'm like barely out of the kitchen working in the front. I'm sort of like, I maybe look babyface, but I will break your collarbone right now. But, you know, and I was already disturbed by things that happened during the course of the meal. And I'm
he
the most impatient.
Sat down
on
next
a table
to
of
you?
Impatient people. Oh. I was the least patient person there and trying not to speak really hard. And I wasn't the person speaking for the party. I was not hosting the party. But he sits down next to me and he's like, was everything great?
Oh, really?
And I just looked at him and I said, I'm sorry, sir. You probably want to speak to the host.
Yeah, I can see.
He's the gentleman on the other side of the table, about three seats down.
You could go sit next to him. Get away from me right now.
And he's like, oh. And he shouts down the table.
Oh!
How are you? I was just like, man, this is some amazing Western friendliness you got going on right here. I hated it.
Yeah,
I was not prepared for that.
And you were in D.C. in early 1990?
Yeah, it was like the fussiest place in the world,
yeah,
you know?
No, not happening well. Yeah, that's funny.
It's like, wow. And what's funny is like a year later or something, I met Mark Miller. He's a perfectly lovely guy. And I understood the idea behind it. Mm-hmm. But the audience was not, even the people in the business were not prepared for what was happening.
Right, right. You know,
and it was jammed.
Yeah.
Because it was
the
new thing.
They were very busy
in
the beginning.
It was the new thing.
Right.
I think the big effort was driving it, but man,
yeah,
there was
I'm
definitely
sure.
stuff that
oh,
I hated.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm sure he was, yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's a real story from the 90s.
So. Things that you used to cook.
I still don't have anything, Tony.
No?
I'm sorry.
Oh,
I can't come up with anything. I can't. Okay. Well, my chef, who I loved and highly respected, made red pepper coulis. So that's funny that you brought that up. And it made me think about it when you said it, because he used to use the stuff that he would shake on everything. And I don't even really know what it was. I mean, I want to say it was something probably like Lowry's seasoning salt. I mean, you know, it was something he found from somewhere and he always used it on. And I mean, the man was a very good chef, but he was self-taught.
Yeah.
No, he was from Argentina. It was something unusual. But I remember when he told me to put it on the fish and I'm like, oh my, no, do I have to do this? It like, it had garlic, it must've had like garlic powder and sea salt, some sort of weird salt. And I don't know, it had all kinds of dry, weird ingredients in it. And it was the only thing that he did that I was like, oh, I can't believe he's doing this. But you know, we all, as chefs, we all do something that I'm sure a cook will come in and go, wow, I can't believe she does that or he does that. Because we all have our little weirdo things. But, that was definitely his. He was a very good cook, and that was really weird that he used that seasoning mix.
I recall there was a girl I was dating when I was in
hotel
school, and I was cooking. I was making food at her apartment. And I'd gotten
lamb shank.
I'd gotten lentils. And the lamb shank, I was going to...
That was going to take like 4 hours.
Yeah, well...
How long were you planning on being there?
I mean, as long as I could. I really liked her. So I put this in the oven, but I had no idea. Like, I hadn't thought through it, you know?
I bet you hadn't.
I had not thought through it. And I'd like had all kinds of stuff in there with this lamb shank. And it, like, onions and tomatoes and I put a whole lot of... It's like I was just learning to cook.
A lot of garlic?
I did that also one time.
Oh, gosh.
That was another thing. Actually, I did that. that's a very
different
story.
That's another story for another time.
but I put all of this... I was trying to cook with herbs, a lot of different herbs. I was trying to learn about them. And I thought I was getting parsley, and I'd gotten cilantro.
Ew.
And a whole lot of it.
Oh.
And I literally, like, for this long cooking item,
ew,
I loaded it up with cilantro.
Oh, that's awful.
And when I pulled this thing out of the oven and started, like, you know, pull things apart and whatnot.
Acted like you were the chef?
And I pulled the swamp thing. Like, with my tongs, I pulled the swamp thing. Like, all of it, like, created this mess. Like, with tomato skins and cilantro.
<He snort. laughs>
I created this mess. It was like green.
And she was like running out the door. She was like, God, do I have to eat that? Oh, God, it probably smelled horrible in that house, too.
It was not my best effort. Of all the lamb dishes I've loved, I hated that, and I made it.
It took a couple of years for you to make lamb again.
I never made lamb for her again. And I never tried to braise something with cilantro again.
Her grandmother was a really good cook. She was from somewhere in Central America or South America? Or no, she was Italian. No, I can't remember.
One was in Puerto Rico. The other was from Trieste.
Yeah, okay. Well, so she was probably like, God, I grew up on the best food, and this guy is cooking me something disgusting.
No, she was very generous about it. She ate the lentils.
Oh, that was nice.
She ate the lentils.
She's a nice person.
So.
Oh, boy.
And there was wine, funny wine.
Foreman and Wolf on food and wine and
dating.
Yeah,
exactly.
And what not to do on a date.
Love and hate.
Valentine.
Valentine's. She hated that.
This is a cautionary tale for Valentine's
Day.
Don't
braise lime with cilantro for your Valentine. God. Unless you want to pull the swamp thing out of the oven.
Oh.
Anyway.
Did you have the plastic, the rubber band still on the cilantro too?
No. Come on.
Oh, good. I'm glad you at least removed that from it.
I was very amateur, but I wasn't that amateur.
Oh, sure. Fine details.
Fine details.
Oh, wow.
Did you ever make cake without salt?
Yeah.
Did you?
Sure.
Did you ever make cake without sugar?
No, I've never done that.
It doesn't work well.
No, that wouldn't go well at all.
Yeah.
Wow.
So nothing that you're like, when you look back, you're like, oh, that was horrible.
Oh. I'll tell you what I used to make in my apartment for my mom when she would come over for lunch, which was a cream cheese and tomato sandwich. And I look back on that and think, oh, that's disgusting. I would put a big slab of cream cheese.
Oh.
I would toast it with tomato. And I think that was it. Ugh. I mean, I think of that, and I think, well, that was gross. But I can't think of any food that... Okay, we used to make manicotti at a restaurant that I worked at, and he was the one that wanted it on there. We put it on for lunch, and we heated it in the microwave. And I look back on that and think, oh, wow, that's just disgusting that we did it that way. But, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I'd never had it. I didn't know how to make it, and he gave it to me to do, so that was a little weird. I don't think that was very successful, but definitely don't heat up manicotti in the microwave. That's weird to me to think back that we even had a microwave in a restaurant where I worked. But yes, we used to do that. That's about all I can come up with, Tony. Sorry. That's it.
Short memory. I guess you gotta.
Yeah.
It's like quarterbacks. You gotta have a short memory, you know, when you throw an interception.
Oh boy. Don't talk about quarterbacks.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, I don't know. I guess maybe I was more adventurous at different times.
Sure, of course.
That's
well. I mean, I definitely, and this is not to say I didn't make mistakes, but if I was making a mistake, it was something that I was making, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not putting this on the menu when I was first cooking. I would never put something on a menu that I wasn't proud of or thought was good.
Most of my errors I made for the people that I love the most. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. If you want to correspond with us, send us an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to listen to this podcast again, or if you wish to listen to any of the other goodies that they have saved, go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. Look for the Foreman Wolf page, and there's a whole menu of goodies there for you. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook, Chef Wolf or Cindy Wolf.
On Instagram, I'm the real Tony Foreman. And hey, thanks for listening.
Happy Sunday. Bye.